Good afternoon. This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show on WCOM LP, Chapel Hill in Carrboro. Listening on 103.5 FM or streaming directly from the WCOM website at wcomfm.org. Going to start this off with a little music. I'll give you some background as to why I chose this when we get into the show a little bit further.
Our first guest tonight is the world's only known singing CIA agent. His name is George Shrub, and he works for the Committee to Intervene Anywhere, which is a charitable organization that works only for the profit of others. Please give an appropriate welcome to the noted and feared anti-folk singer, Mr. George Shrub.
All right. How y'all doing tonight? Doing well? See what we can do about that then. Anyone here not familiar with my organization, Committee to Intervene Anywhere? Well, it doesn't matter. It's familiar with you, isn't it? In fact, I see a number of faces here of one per person, more or less. Many of them familiar to me already, of course, from my files. Oh, you don't know what a pleasure it is for you to be here with me tonight. You're probably not going to find out. Anyhow, I'm just here to share my point of view with you, really, so you won't need your own or anything. As I say, I've been traveling all over the world, and everywhere I go, I hear the same old refrain, Yankee go home. Doesn't even rhyme. But I make myself at home pretty much wherever I go, don't I? Yes, I do.
At least it's going there.
Well, we have seen a number of startling events that have shocked and awed us in recent times, and of course, more shocking than having events is having some of you become somewhat aware of some of these events, so I'm just here to kind of explain them away for you. Events rapidly become something else. They become part of history, and I always say those who do not understand their history will have the opportunity to repeat it, so that's the goal here tonight. Have a little consciousness-lowering exercise here, kind of a counterintelligence cabaret where we counter your intelligence, and according to my intelligence, you need it. Some of you have been seen in public, in groups, not shopping. Yes. That's a problem, and that is a clear misunderstanding of the color-coded alert system that we have provided for you. So we're going to talk about that just a little bit. A quick review for you. The base level is green. It's perfectly safe. You're free to go shopping. And next level is blue. That's the guarded condition. You can go shopping, but take a guard. Where we're situated presently is the yellow level, heightened alert. You are urged to strongly consider shopping online. Now, the orange high risk, orange level, where we have returned from, you should send a shadow shopper. This can be procured from the shadow government and will be sent to a shopping mall at an undisclosed location. By the way, I'm at liberty to divulge tonight for the first time the actual location of Mr. Cheney's undisclosed location. It is right near a McDonald's. Highest level red, extreme risk, red alert. Your shopping decisions will be made for you by the Consumer Decision Division of the Department of Homeland Security. Charge your credit card, delivered to your door when we go back down to yellow. Speaking of the department, I have a new assignment as a cultural director of the Department of Homeland Security. I achieved this assignment by virtue of writing the winning entry in the departmental theme song contest. There were other entrants, but they disappeared. So I did write that song, and I will sing it, and you will like it.
Have you been involved with the...
Okay, I think that'll bring us back onto the air. A little bit of introduction from about George Shrub, the singing CIA agent works for the Committee to Intervene Anywhere, and the reason that we had him on was that there was a possibility that Ray McGovern, a former CIA agent and well-known anti-war activist.
In reality.
Yes. And a real former CIA agent, yes, is going to be speaking this evening. And John Huer, who is our guest also on the show, is can give us more details about Ray's appearance this evening.
Yeah, let's say hello to John. This is Lori Hoyt. Dick Paddock was just speaking, my co-host, and I'm his co-host. And John Huer is a friend and WILP member who we're delighted to have on. We haven't had you on for quite a while. You've been so busy going all over the country, causing trouble, I hope. And so John is here tonight to tell us about a lot of things that he's been working on. But let's start off with telling us about Ray McGovern tonight. Tell us a little bit about Ray. And
thank you, Lori, and good to be with you and Dick and Beck on the WILF Radio Hour. Ray McGovern will be speaking tonight at 7:30 in Chapel Hill at the Community Church Unitarian Universalist, sponsored by Balance and Accuracy in Journalism. Ray will be speaking specifically about Iran. As you probably know, there's been an uptick in drum beats for war against Iran, despite pretty overwhelming evidence from the Pentagon and military brass and the National Security Institutes that Iran is. There's no proof that Iran is even working on a nuclear weapon.
Right. You might also mention the IAEA.
That's right.
Is also said flat out that they've been doing inspections and they found, as you say, pretty much nothing.
But we've seen this play before. In 2002, the Bush White House announced that they don't roll out new products in August, so they waited till September to begin beating the war drums for an invasion of Iraq based on deceptions about alleged weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, based on false accusations of ties between the Saddam Hussein regime and Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, and to such terrible consequences. I can certainly applaud troops coming home from Iraq, but I find it extremely objectionable, a triumphant tone that we've accomplished much of anything other than the destruction of the country and the people of Iraq. Thousands of U.S. service members killed, tens of thousands terribly wounded, hundreds of thousands of Iraqis killed, and millions displaced from their homes.
Yeah, you know, there may be a few people who have a triumphant tone, but I think the American public has really gotten tired. You know, 10 years of war, at least the latest round of wars, and I think the appetite for it seems to have lessened, at least somewhat, of course, not among some neoconservative people and some people who make profit from this, but certainly, don't you feel that there's been at least a difference of tone than when there was all this excitement about the invasion of Iraq and all the New York Times and, you know, all the ones in the know were beating the drumbeat for war and telling lies?
Well, Lori, I think that's absolutely right. And we're seeing a growing consensus of majorities of even Republicans.
Yeah.
Even Republican candidates for president who say that the war in Afghanistan has gone on too long. The objectives were never clear. It's time to bring our troops home. And the latest atrocity of an American service member accused of the murder of 16 Afghan civilians, nine women and children, is just a sad reminder that we're in the wrong place at the wrong time for the wrong reasons. We're jeopardizing the health and safety of our own service members and certainly jeopardizing the safety of the people of Afghanistan.
Definitely.
Yeah, one of the things that, you know, you mentioned about the servicemen coming home, one of the things that has really disturbed me is that basically the military seems to be willing for them to just kind of come home and melt into the civilian population if they're mustered out or whatever, basically not getting all excited or trying to drum up any enthusiasm. But Rachel Maddow in particular has been out trying to beat the drum to have parades to honor all these returning service people. And that just kind of rubs me the wrong way. Because we went there under false pretenses, and now we're coming home, we're going to celebrate our false pretenses? I don't think so.
Well, I would hope that she would, and everybody else would be doing a drumbeat for jobs and mental health services and physical services, so many service people. John's going to be able to tell us more about that because John's a member of Veterans for Peace, and you are a veteran. But this, it's a scandal how some of these service people have had to go through paperwork and jump hoops to just get the basic medical care that they were promised. So, John, maybe, I don't know, are we getting off too quick on another
Well, Lori, I'd be happy to share some of the story of Logan Mayolaturi, who is an Iraq veteran, who is now a student at Duke Divinity School. And Logan tells a story that when he first enrolled at Duke Divinity School, there was an orientation program, and the counselor told the incoming students that they could share anything that they wanted with the counselor off the record, even if it was criminal activity, even if they killed someone. And the other students chuckled and chortled and laughed at the idea that any of their fellow students had actually killed someone. But for Logan, a returning soldier, it was not a laughing matter. And Logan started a program that he calls Centurions Guild. Centurions Guild.
Guild, okay.
And Logan was the prime mover for a conference at Duke Divinity School last November on Veterans Day on conscience and war. Mm. He's a brilliant young former Army member whose book, Reborn on the 4th of July, The Challenge of Faith, Patriotism, and Conscience, will be coming out this 4th of July.
Wow.
Some other very dynamic young service members that are in the Triangle that have recently become associated with our Eisenhower Chapter of Veterans for Peace here in the North Carolina Triangle. Russell Snyder is a 3-tour Iraq veteran, Army sergeant with psychological operations. He was based in Fort Bragg. Now he's a student at North Carolina State University, and his book, Hearts and Minds, M-I-N-E-S, Minds, is an extraordinary tale of his, in kind of a diary form, but sprinkled with very profound insights about what war does to soldiers and civilians.
Yeah, I think that I hope it's been maybe part of where people are getting tired of war. The soldiers coming home have had the courage to be telling their stories. And even our media is finally, you know, sometimes on whether 60 Minutes or a news program, or I know on NPR and the radio, some of them, you know, they'll show pictures of some of the wounded and the struggles they're having, and also the statistics that have come out about the pain that a lot of these soldiers feel, the psychic pain, the psychological pain, the high suicide rate, which has been an embarrassment to the military, the high divorce rate from the stress, and my heart goes out to the families of those who even come home at least with no overt wounds, but just the stress that they're under. And then, of course, those who, it always comes to the family to help take care of those who've got physical wounds and care for them. I mean, you know, after the First World War, there were, you know, generations, they thought it was going to be the war to end all wars. And unfortunately, it takes us a long time to learn our lessons, but to the soldiers and the families, my heart goes out that they're the ones who've borne the brunt of a war that a lot of us are comfortable and forget about. You know, we go on with our day-to-day because there's not been, you know, mass drafting. There's been, the public has not been asked to make any sacrifices. You know, not even reminding to buy war bonds or a rationing. It's all been, what was it Bush said? Just go out and shop. Because we need you to, just go about your business and just go on out and shop. And it was literally the message that came out of the White House. And you were at a conference last fall in Charlottesville.
Lori, you raise important issues that are described in considerable detail in Mia Austin Scoggins' book, Extra Casualties of War. Mia Austin Scoggins was a presenter at a conference at Guilford College in January of last year, 2011, on the 50th anniversary of President Eisenhower's farewell speech, January 17th, 1961. And this weekend conference was put together at Guilford College, inspired by Chuck Fager, who is the director of Quaker House down in Fayetteville, which is the longest continuously operating GI rights meeting house in the U.S., continuously since 1969. And Mia Austin Scoggins really hushed the attendees to this conference with her terrible litany of statistics of the extra casualties of war, including, as you say, the family members
The unsung heroes and heroines.
Who become themselves victims.
Absolutely.
Particularly of veterans that require lifelong care.
Yes.
But about that conference, the military-industrial complex at 50, our friends up in Charlottesville, Virginia, decided that they would host their own conference and bring some of the same presenters and some new presenters up there. So last September 16th through the 18th, we had a weekend conference in Charlottesville, and the presentations from that conference have been compiled by editor David Swanson in a book, The Military-Industrial Complex at 50.
And this book has just come out.
Wow. It's available at Amazon. It's available at the website, www.mic50.org. And it's an extraordinary collection of essays and presentations with quite a few contributions from North Carolinians. The president emeritus of the Eisenhower chapter of Veterans for Peace, Wally Myers, wrote a very dynamic dialogue between an imagined conversation between Dwight Eisenhower and Thomas Jefferson, who lived in Charlottesville, and Martin Luther King, Jr., that I thought was a brilliant, dramatic production.
John, you know, just for some of our listeners, because there's just so much information coming at us that sometimes we got to kind of go through the little files in our mind to clue in. When we're talking about the military-industrial complex and Eisenhower, do you want to give us some brief, I don't know if you have the exact quote, but I know what he said, the warning he... Some young folks may not know this either.
Right, Lori. Well, here's an example. In the councils of government, these are the words of President Dwight D. Eisenhower in his farewell address to the country and to the world. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals so that security and liberty may prosper together.
So that was very, very prescient that he being a former general and about to become a former president, knew better than anybody how the levers of power work and how money influences things. And so this conference was the military-industrial complex at 50 years after that warning.
That's correct. And on another theme, speaking about our young veterans who are inspiring as older veterans here in the Triangle and elsewhere, my friend Sam Winstead, who is a World War II Marine combat veteran who served in the Pacific in World War II, a retired farmer from Person County, Sam received a letter from his grandson, who was serving in the army in Iraq. And the letter said in part, "Granddaddy, I don't know why we're here. The people don't want us here. We're wrecking this poor country." And Sam was, as he describes it, awakened out of a deep sleep. And decided that he would take some action and became a kind of ambassador in North Central North Carolina, visiting mayors and town councils in places like Mebane and Creedmoor and Roxborough, and encouraging the mayors to join Mayors for Peace. But he was just getting started. He decided it was time to pick up a bicycle after 70 years since his last time he had been on a bicycle. And he's been in training now for a Ride for Peace from Raleigh, North Carolina, to Washington, D.C. 86-year-old World War II veteran.
86? It's like Granny D, who walked away from California to Washington.
Right, right.
A few years back at 89, oh my gosh, that's an inspiration.
So
he hasn't done it yet. He's training to do it.
April 29th to May 5th. It's a 7-day ride up through North Carolina and Central Virginia. We'll be having overnight stays at Henderson and Blackstone, Virginia, Goochland, Virginia, Culpeper, Middleburg, Leesburg, and then a ride into Washington, D.C. And we've applied for a permit for a rally at Lafayette Park across the street from the White House.
Wow.
On Cinco de Mayo, the 5th of May.
Cinco de Mayo. Oh, that's really impressive. You know, I've been to Person County in years past, and you know, it is a pretty rural, conservative area, and good for him. Good for him. But that it was his the grandson.
That's right. It was his grandson's letter that kind of awakened Sam out of what he describes as a deep slumber.
Yeah. One of my grandsons joined the military shortly after 9/11, all fired up with wanting to do something for his country, and he was just graduating from high school and, you know, wasn't sure what he wanted to do, and then this happened, and he just said, well, you know, he thought about it, but he wanted to do what he thought was going to be a good thing. And actually, he came home from Afghanistan. They were doing mapping up in the mountains, you know, parachuting out of planes. I don't think he saw a lot of actual combat, but he saw the people a lot. And he came home and he said, I don't know what we're doing there. Same thing. The people don't want us. We're making things worse, not better. And, you know, so he's in school about to graduate with a master's degree in public health and wants to do good in another way, especially working with young males about responsibility and their sexuality and a lot of issues like that. But so it's, you know, hopefully more and more of these young people, if they're not too damaged and physically and psychically hurt, that good for those who find the courage and the energy not only to be trying to get their lives back together, but to speak out that way. It's wonderful.
And, Lori, the expense of the military establishment and the wars is, I think, beginning to sink in a bit to the American people.
The American
people seem content to spend half of every income tax dollar on the military as long as the economy is buzzing along. But if the economy is reduced to a murmur of jobs lost permanently overseas, then people start to notice that when human services are slashed and the military budget keeps growing, when the alleged threats that the government told us about in Iraq and Afghanistan were never real. They were never real. And the same applies to Iran. But North Carolina Peace Action is also very engaged in a Bring the War Dollars Home campaign. We had a town hall meeting in Durham in September with the mayor, members of the city council, members of the county commission, Board of Education, local state representatives and senators, and Congressman David Price on the trade-offs that we're losing as well as lost opportunities. For example, the people of Mecklenburg County in Charlotte, for congressionally appropriated funds for the war in Afghanistan this year is $327 million. And when the people of Mecklenburg County realize what kind of trade-offs that they're suffering from with this extraordinary expense for questionable purposes. To spend $1 million to have one soldier in harm's way in Afghanistan for a year while we're laying off teachers and closing libraries at home makes no sense.
No, and I think that statistic is such an eye-opener, $1 million for each soldier, because that's for all the gas and things supporting that soldier, not supporting him well financially, because a fair amount of them are in food stamps. They are not, the money is not going to paying the average soldier very well at all. Of course, I guess a lot goes also to the very lucrative pensions for a lot of the higher-ups in the military who've made it a career. But that's another story that maybe we could have some statistics on at some time. But, yes, Bringing the War Dollars Home is a great title, and I know Wilf has been very supportive of that project.
North Carolina Peace Action also hosted a town meeting on February 20th at the legislative building in Raleigh, mm-hmm. featuring Republican Congressmember Walter Jones and Democratic Congressman David Price.
And hasn't Walter Jones been pretty amazing?
Walter Jones has been the strongest advocate for peace in the U.S. House of Representatives.
And this... I think most of our listeners probably have heard of him, but for a few who haven't, he was one who had been a strong supporter of the Defense Department, strong supporter of all of that money to make us secure. But he also really cared about the servicemen, and he would write letters, and more he got to question as he was writing, I don't know, hundreds of letters.
Walter Jones somewhat ignominiously earned the moniker Walter Freedom Fries Jones before
That's
the
right.
invasion of Iraq, when he was perturbed that the government of France was resisting the U.S. impulse to invade Iraq and proposed to change the name in the legislative cafeteria from French Fries to Freedom Fries.
That's how strongly he was started out for this war and the Defense Department. But
he went through quite a crisis of conscience and very much regrets his early support for the war. He's written personally over 10,000 letters to family members of U.S. service members that have lost their lives in Iraq and Afghanistan.
And I don't know if any of us know what precipitated the crisis of conscience, or was it writing all those letters and...
It was a combination, Laurie, of visiting wounded veterans returning and families that had loved ones lost their lives over there, and then realizing the level of deception that the Bush administration produced to create this great enthusiasm for the invasion of Iraq.
And as slowly as the truth, too slowly, but started eking out. Well, bless his heart, because some people just don't seem to have that kind of a conscience, and it was just an amazing turnaround. It makes you really believe in redemption of the human soul, you know, that, and he has gone in the other direction, really fighting these. Whoa, I'm getting a signal from Dick Paddock. We're going to have a station break. Before we do the station break announcements, I just want to mention a couple of public service announcements. The farm workers, who are also allies of ours, it's called the OC Hope Project. Farm workers, they're going to have a little very, I guess, a fundraiser, a get-together on Tuesday, April 3rd at 6 p.m. at Vimala's Curry Blossom Cafe at 431 West Franklin Street. $5 suggested donation. Her food is wonderful. Everyone is welcome. So please.
When don't forget, when Vimala cooks, everybody eats.
Yes, nobody gets turned away. But if you could make at least a $5 donation, that would be nice. But everyone is welcome if you don't have it. And, of course, if you can give a little extra, that would be well appreciated, too. So mark your calendar if you want to have a lovely and there's outside. The weather's getting so beautiful. There's the courtyard to sit outside and eat, as well as tables inside. Also, some of you may remember Panama Deception was a documentary that won one of the Oscars some years back. And Barbara Trent was the producer, and she, director. Barbara Trent will be showing a screening of her Academy Award-winning film, The Panama Deception, also on April 3rd at the Haynes Art Center. It'll be at 6:30 p.m. in room 121. Following the film, there will be a question and answer session for analyzing the film and current events, and that was about our invasion, one of our many invasions of Panama. And that was also another deception foisted on the American public.
Right. Wasn't that a documentary made by a group that was headquartered down in White Cross for a while?
I don't think...
There was a documentary film company that was down in White Cross for a while.
I don't think that it's the same. I don't think so. But she moved here a few years later and has been living here out west of here. So they may be at White Cross now. Maybe have. I'm not quite sure about that, Dick.
Okay.
You might be right. And I just want to make one other quick one because it's spring and we care about farmers and our local farmers. And the Chapel Hill Farmers Market, unlike the Carborough one, they do close down for a couple of months in the winter. And March 31st, that'd be the Saturday after this one, they're going to reopen at the University Mall parking lot from 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. And they will feature a variety of seasonal products. And there'll also be their Tuesday market will start on April 17th from 3 to 6 p.m. So pay attention. On April 7th, the markets will have an annual Easter egg hunt. So this spring is really here. The farmers are getting their produce out to us, and that's always wonderful. So now we can get to, I'll turn it over to Dick for our station break.
Yes, this is WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Carborough, 103.5 on your FM dial, as you know if you're tuned in. And if you're having problems, or particularly if you can get it now, but when you get home you can't get it, the station, you can go to the station's website, which is wcomfm.org, and you can stream our program at this moment, or whatever program is actually on the air, going over the airways, is available anywhere. Yeah, in the world that the internet reaches. We are underwritten by the Internationalist Bookstore at 405 West Franklin Street in Chapel Hill. We ask you to drop by and have a look at all the things that that will tickle your fancy, because you can't find them anywhere else. This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom Hour, presented by the Triangle WILPF. And that's Triangle WILPF.org is the website.
And I hope John is going to be going around and hopes to be get this book that he's been telling us about, brand new book out of the press, The Military-Industrial Complex at 50, a compilation of all these wonderful presenters, edited by David Swanson, who is a highly organized activist, which is wonderful. It's a beautiful paperback, And right now it is on Amazon, but it's going to be hopefully placed in some, it will be in the libraries, and hopefully get some in places like the Internationalist as soon as we can. And Dick, I wonder, just so we can take a little break, just a short piece of music, or
okay, sure.
Is there anything?
I've got something that I haven't heard for a while, and I want to give a go again. I think most people will recognize it.
Okay. Oh, Dick, thank you for that. One of my favorite people, Leonard Cohen. And I was just telling John how I have Canadian relatives, and when I was up there some years back, they were singing some of his songs and knew all the words, and I couldn't figure out, gosh, Leonard Cohen, some people have not, you know, even heard of him that much. And then it dawned on me, of course, he's Canadian. But I do, before we go back to John, I just also want to give a quick update on the fracking issue, which we have talked about a lot on this show, and just let people know that on March 27th, Thursday night, I believe, that at East Chapel Hill High School, very convenient for local people, there's going to be a whole program on fracking, and the Raging Grannies are going to be singing outside. I don't know they'll necessarily be part of the program at 7 o'clock, yeah. So please try to show up.
If it is the 27th, that's actually Tuesday.
Well, then it's a Tuesday. It's March 27th. Thank you. We need to be clear about
that. You're welcome. And they had a companion, sort of a companion to that last night in Sanford.
Yes.
And it's so this will be, and it's moving north to Chapel Hill. So please be sure and turn out. Apparently, there were like 600 people that turned out last night.
That's fabulous. And some of our WILT members were there,
right,
who've been working really hard on that, Lib Hutchby and John Wagner and others. Just a very short update. One of the things that's happening, rather than wait for the state or whatever, activists are going around to municipalities and getting resolutions passed and guess what? Creedmoor, you mentioned this fellow up in Person County. Creedmoor and Budner were one of the first to pass resolutions not wanting to have fracking within their boundaries, and I think Pittsburgh is either passed or is, yes, and it's Chapel Hill and Carborough are going to be either have already passed out. I think it's going to be coming up in Chapel Hill next week. So people are going all over the state and maybe in other parts of the country. This is another thing with the American population. The more they get to hear beyond the hype, about this being so clean and what it actually is and what it actually does, people are getting alarmed and are starting to take steps. And the next step is to be able to change the resolutions into ordinances to give them more teeth.
Yeah.
So this is a big thing. So please show up, you local folks, the 27th.
Yeah. And you need to be advised that this is a difficult thing to do because North Carolina does not have what's called home rule.
No, it's
most of,
not very democratic in that regard.
Right, most of the laws of substance at the municipal and county level have to be approved by the state legislature in order to take effect. So the basic resolution that municipalities pass doesn't have any teeth to it. So, however, there are other places, of course, where that's not true, that have what is called home rule. For example, there are towns and cities in New York State where they have actually done that,
mm-hmm.
and the import of the ordinances is that while the state can regulate and have say over how fracking is done, the local municipalities, by virtue of zoning or some similar power, can say whether or not it actually occurs, regardless of whether it follows the rules that the state lays down. The town can say, not here.
And what we may be able to do here, in spite of not having home rule, is we can, I think, pass regulations about how many trucks on the road, whether they're dangerous, because there's an enormous amount of truck traffic. But that's an issue we've covered pretty extensively. We're continuing to cover. And I just wanted to make sure that people knew about the big meeting at East Chapel Hill High School on the 27th. So I would like now to get back to our guest, John Ewer.
Pardon the interruption.
Well, it's always good, you know, just like Amy Goodman, we take a little break and play a little music and give the station some credit here for it's an all-volunteer station, and we're very grateful that it's here in Carborough. So, John, you're with Veterans for Peace, and I know you not only work with the Eisenhower chapter here, but you go all around to conferences around the country, too, right?
Lori, I've been able, since I retired from the university here in Chapel Hill in 2006, I've been very privileged to be able to visit mostly on the up and down the East Coast, but some on the West Coast too. Last year, our Veterans for Peace Convention was in Portland, Oregon, and had an opportunity to visit friends in California and Oregon and Washington State during that trip, since I don't get out there very often. Also recent, last November, at the SOA in Fort Benning, Georgia. And this year, there really are a lot of opportunities right here in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the Occupy Wall Street movement that began in New York last September 17th really blossomed across the country and the world, and particularly here in North Carolina. We had a Occupy General Assembly meeting in Raleigh back in February, where we had 12 different local occupations that came together. Several of the occupiers are involved with a reception for the Bank of America shareholders meeting in Charlotte coming up in May, exposing the crimes of the Bank of America, particularly their fraudulent mortgage foreclosures. And other crimes that are being currently litigated in Greensboro and elsewhere. So we're also organizing for a reception in Charlotte in September for the Democratic National Convention. And people can go to protestdnc.org to learn more about organizing efforts. There are going to be a lot of people in Charlotte in September. we're working not just to protest the convention, but to educate conventioneers.
Good. Because I think it's so important not just to be against, but to be for, and to, and that public education, especially people who care enough to go to a convention, you know, and spend that time. I think that's a wonderful mission and goal.
And our 2012 Veterans for Peace Convention will be in Miami this coming August with the theme of peace in Latin America and the U.S., focusing on the peace movements throughout the hemisphere. We'll be offering tours following the convention to Haiti and to Cuba for people interested in studying the movements in those places. So that's a very exciting opportunity that's coming up this summer.
So even before retirement, but now you have much more time and energy, you've dedicated your life, I think, from way, way back to caring about what's happening with government, to people. You're a veteran. This was, when were you?
Well,
what war? There's been so many of them.
There have been so many, too many, certainly.
Too many.
I became somewhat radicalized, you might say, in 1967 when I joined the Merchant Marine. And
okay.
Spent some time in New York City before I was able to find a berth on a merchant ship. Later that fall, I participated in my first peace rally in Washington, D.C. to protest the Vietnam War, and got into an argument with a pro-war Vietnam vet on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. And I was a young know-it-all student, college kid, and he finally got tired of arguing with me and used the old canard, if you haven't been there, you don't know what you're talking about. So in order to further my education, I dropped out of college and found a ride from Michigan to San Francisco and a berth on a merchant ship bound for Vietnam. And
wow.
I wasn't there very long, but long enough to confirm my worst fears that my government was engaged in great crimes against the people of Vietnam and our own servicemen and women. And that was 1968. And subsequent to that, I refused to serve in the army of Richard Nixon in 1970. So it's been some decades that, and we have more work to do. My friend Ray McGovern, a former Marine, former CIA agent who gave presidential briefings to three different presidential administrations, who has been a stalwart, untiring activist. We'll be speaking tonight at 7:30 at the Community Church on Purefoy Road here in Chapel Hill. And I'd like to share just a little bit of what Ray McGovern had to say about activism when we had our conference in Charlottesville.
And Ray has been here in the past. It's been a little while, but I heard him in the past. And, you know, he's a grandfather now. And he's also, I think he was quoting some poetry. I just know he brought tears to my eyes. Just his humanity shines forth from him, his basic decency and kindliness. But he's also pretty learned in a couple of languages, and I remember he quoted some poem, and I don't remember what it was, but I just remember he made me...
Well, Ray is an activist. He was on the boat to Gaza, The Audacity of Hope, last year. But you're right. He's also a bit of a poet and a philosopher, and I'd like to share just a little bit in that vein.
Okay. I'd love it.
This section is
called love it.
Anger or Unreasoned Patience. I find that people often are conflicted about whether or not to allow themselves to be angry. Thomas Aquinas, who wrote a lot about virtue, got quite angry when he realized there was no word in Latin for just the right amount of anger, for the virtue of anger. Thomas cited what a famous 4th century theologian said on the subject. He or she who is not angry when there is just cause for anger sins. Why? Because anger looks to the good of justice, and if you can live among injustice without anger, you are unjust. Aquinas added his own corollary. He railed against what he called unreasoned patience, which, he said, sows the seeds of vice, nourishes negligence, and persuades not only evil people, but good people to do evil. As we look at the effects of the military-industrial complex, who will deny that there is just cause for anger? just the right amount of anger, the virtue of anger, and the fact that this is part of what motivates us, well, that's as it should be. Frankly, I have not thought of us activists being virtuous, but maybe we are, at least in our willingness to channel our anger into challenging and changing the many injustices here and around the world. There should be no room these days for unreasoned patience.
Wow, Thomas Aquinas. That is an amazing quote. One of the doctors of the church.
And again, Ray will be speaking tonight at 7:30 at the Community Church, sponsored by Balance and Accuracy in Journalism.
Well, I hope everybody who's listening, and if you can't go yourself, tell some folks about it, tell your friends, tell your family, because you will be so glad to listen to somebody like Ray McGovern, who's not only an activist, but speak such words of wisdom and speak so beautifully words of wisdom. Yeah, that's great. I'm so glad that it turned out that you could come today and share that with us, John. And all the work that you do. How are we doing? We still have a little bit of time.
Still got some time.
And I think maybe tell us again about the book. And this came out of a conference in Charlottesville.
It came out of a conference in Charlottesville that was inspired by a conference at Guilford College in Greensboro in January of 2011 that was organized by Chuck Fager, who is now the outgoing director after 10 years at Quaker House in Fayetteville near Fort Bragg.
And this book, you just heard, this is the new book that John was just reading, this quote from Thomas Aquinas. That Ray McGovern was when he talked at that conference. But this book is out, and this is a book that I think will have a lot of words of wisdom. Well, you're in here, John.
I had a small contribution.
And Robert Jensen, who's wonderful. I recognize names, Anne Wright.
Yes, John did have a small contribution. Yes, he was George Washington.
You did a play.
He mentioned the play earlier, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and Martin Luther King.
I apologize, Dick, but Eisenhower and Thomas Jefferson and Martin Luther King.
Right.
I already had the Eisenhower haircut.
And so the book is The Military Industrial Complex at 50, the 50th anniversary of Dwight D. Eisenhower's famous warning to the nation as he stepped down from the presidency. I think he felt that he could then say it. I wish he felt he could have said it earlier in his presidency, but at least he did it then. And it's a compilation of several wonderful people, who, including our dear guest, John Ewer. And it's edited by David Swenson, who is a well-organized person, because this was very quick to get these compiled and get this book printed, and it's here, folks. And it'll be in our library. You can get it on Amazon, but John's going to go around with a bag of them to the smaller bookstores, because we try to promote the small bookstores, including our backup person here, the Internationalist Bookstore.
Right, our underwriters.
Our underwriter. So, John, is there any last word of wisdom you want to give us, and then we'll play a little bit more music? I hope a little bit more Leonard Cohen.
Well, Lori, I would like to share one of the presenters at Charlottesville.
Okay.
Whose name is Mary Beth Sullivan.
Okay.
Presented on the conversion of our economy from a military to a civilian economy. And part of the tactic of the military-industrial complex is to seed different congressional districts with military contracts that individual Congress members would feel obliged to support in the name of jobs.
Absolutely.
But what we're learning
it's like tentacles all over the
exactly.
nation.
Exactly. But what we're learning is that military spending is the least efficient jobs program. But it's very popular among the elite because it's the most efficient profit generator, because the Pentagon spends too much money to keep track of.
Right.
So Mary Beth Sullivan's essay in this book, I highly recommend it, talks about the strategy of educating communities that how their investments could be so much more productive in terms of providing jobs and services to the community.
Right.
And that just, I hope we can have like a show sometime about all these returning servicemen. If we could get the government to do the seed money and to support it till it gets going, building windmills and all the infrastructure to really have our solar, you know, they could be outfitting. First, could start with the business in the community, making them all energy efficient. I mean, that could be, and you can outsource that. People could be trained, and this could be wonderful, technical, well-paying work for our service people. But, you know, you've got to have the political will to say, rather than a war against these other countries, let's not, I don't want to use war terminology, though, but
let's overcome.
But an all-out it could be like, you know, like when they had the whole thing with going to the moon, let's have a whole big thing about saving the planet. Yeah. And
don't say that too loud. Gingrich will think it means Mars.
Oh, God. So anyhow, but that's something when I was thinking when you're talking about how we can have that transition. And they say, oh, well, during the transition, we still got to support, and we do to a certain extent keep some of the old technologies going for a brief period. But if we make that a brief period and really put the money into training a lot of these service people and young people into saving the planet and these. Yeah. Okay. Send us out in some wonderful music, Dick. This has been the okay. Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, our wake up call. Wake up call and connect the dots. And it's Dick Paddock, co-host Lori Hoyt. And
our guest, John.
Thank you so much, John.
Thank you, Dick and Lori.
Okay, we'll go out in some music. Wow. This is really interesting. This has been, you've been...
We'll be going down so deep, the river's gonna weep, and the mountain's gonna shout amen. It's coming like the tidal flood beneath the lunar sway, imperial, mysterious, in amorous ray. Democracy is coming to the USA.